Although he's conducted in New York, Boston, Paris, London, Amsterdam, and Stockholm, it's the Berklee Symphony in California that Kent Nagano has called home since 1979. He's also the music director of the Lyon Opera in France. Nagano's training is classical, but he's known as someone who likes to program complex modern works, ranging from Mahler, French composer Olivier Messiaen, to Frank Zappa. I asked him if he always intended to stretch the usual repertoire.
I can't say that it was totally premeditated. I did have training as a composer. So because of that, when I approach a score, I'm trying to approach a score and bring to it a very objective analysis of the score in terms of what it brings, but also because of my background, I go ahead and attach a very strong subjective evaluation of the score. And I think it is important for an artist or a performer, any kind of performer, to actually feel free and secure and also be responsible enough to do enough research such that you can lay down a subjective opinion and have it be the basis for an interpretation. Since I don't draw any particular boundaries in terms of time, when it was written, period, or whether or not it happens to be in vogue, that just by definition means that sometimes I'm going to be performing pieces with great enthusiasm that no one's ever heard of before. It hasn't been the intent to bring unusual repertoire. My intent has been to bring music of the highest quality to audiences with the utmost respect for audiences and to perform them at the highest level possible.
How did you first make the connection with Frank Zappa?
The connection with Frank Zappa came from, well, indirectly from Pierre Boulez. One of the first times that I went over to France, the big dream of mine was to see the IRCAM Center at the Georges Pompidou Center, because I had heard so much about what Pierre Boulez was doing there. And a friend of mine was head of the music research, Todd Macover, who's a composer. We had gone to school together, and he had several times invited me to come down and just see what sort of activity was going on down there. So I went down, and I took a look at a list of various composers who had been scheduled for two seasons in advance. Now, on this list were some composers who were given a commission to write a piece, and for others, there were composers that were going to be premiered for the first time, have their music played for the first time there at the Georges Pompidou Center. And among the composer's name, at the end of the list, because his name starts with Z, was Frank Zappa. And I was absolutely astounded. And I asked Todd, why is Frank Zappa's name here? And he said, oh, well, Pierre Boulez was approached by Frank Zappa to perform some of his music, which evidently is quite difficult. Boulez liked it enough so that he programmed some of the music onto the regular Ensemble Intercontemporain season. Well, it stuck in my mind, I suppose, because even though I was not at that time a Frank Zappa enthusiast, when I came back to the San Francisco area where I was living at that time, shortly thereafter, Frank Zappa came through on tour. So I just gave a call to his sponsors to find out if I could somehow talk to him about his music. Not only did I receive a response, but Frank called me himself and said, come to the rock show. And during the intermission, he would show me some of his scores. So I wasn't a rock enthusiast at that time either, so it was a very, very strange culture shock for me to go to a rock concert with all this very loud, extremely dramatic music. And to go backstage just to see, take a look at the life of a rock star. I'd never seen it before. But we met briefly. He gave me a handful of scores, and I took a look at them. And they were indeed very, very difficult, very complex, but interesting at the same time.
What stood out for you in looking at them?
Certainly it was the way that he had codified through normal notation his free use of rhythm. It was a combination of extremely restricted rhythm in that it was notated very precisely, but if performed properly and accurately, it would give the impression of total freedom of pulse. You would be somehow unaware of where the normal pulse was because the polyrhythms were so extreme and so constant. So I returned the scores, And I attached a note that I felt some of the scores were really interesting, and maybe someday, I could put together a performance of one or two of the pieces in the Bay Area. That was basically how the contact was made, but I didn't hear anything from Frank for a long time, and I basically forgot about it all until I got a call out of the blue one day asking if I would go with Frank and his entourage and record a series of records with the London Symphony. And that was how our friendship, which goes on even today, was really first started.
When you hear music that you've worked with in performance in a hall on a disc, are you disappointed? Are you satisfied with the sound that then comes out of a CD or a cassette or a record?
Actually, Serge, that question is, I think, going to get me in a lot of trouble because I have an unusual attitude towards recording. For a long time, I didn't record at all. Record the actual medium of recording itself. It's a loaded medium, in that it's become so abused by media today and by marketing agents, using the recording as almost a type of a calling card these days, or a type of a billboard, a source of publicity. The more records you make, the greater artist you are. But I think there was a time when, if you were an artist who made a recording, it did say, or perhaps reflect in some way, that you were one of the leaders within your field. Now today, that's certainly not at all the case. You can pay for your own recording and have it done in these so-called vanity labels. Essentially, that's what Frank Zappa did with his music. He hired an orchestra, hired a conductor, and paid for recording time and produced his own record album.
Where do you think the sense of self-assurance about yourself came from? I guess I read it as self-assurance, that some people in the music business would want to have a stack of records, of credits, those calling cards as you referred to. But you seem quite satisfied to do just a music performance absolutely well, whether it's just the orchestra hall that hears it.
The actual recording industry has changed a lot. And unfortunately, you can buy a lot of terrible recordings, even by great artists, because under the conditions of which they've been recorded. And, you know, it's no one's particular fault, but I think the financial realities of how to create a recording these days have, and the budgetary requirements have changed in such a way that that the end result can actually not be something that you can be proud of. And that strikes me as something horrific, if you recorded something and it's there forever and it doesn't represent truly what you feel inside. That to me would be the greatest disservice to both yourself and to audiences, whoever would listen to it. I have a different attitude towards the recording medium also in general. I like to record in the studio, and I don't like so much live performances, because I make such a big difference in my mind, personally, between the experience of going to a live concert and what the function of that is. That's the real artistic exchange, is going to a live concert. Listening to recording is not, it really isn't. The real way that you make the acquaintance of someone is sitting across the table and talking to them, having dialogue, having an exchange, a living exchange. Yes, you can tell something about a person by looking at their photograph, but it doesn't tell you really on many dimensions what that person is like as a person. And the same way is with a piece of music. You can tell something about a piece of music by listening to a recording of it, but you can't tell anywhere near the whole scope of the piece unless you're hearing it being performed by living people in living time, in a living hall, as a living person who's participating and reacting emotionally, spiritually, and physically to what's going on in that space at that particular time.
Conductor Kent Nagano. Here's an excerpt of Kent Nagano and the Berklee Symphony Orchestra performing Messiaen's Un vitrail et des oiseaux, A Stained Glass Window and Birds. This is Fresh Air.